Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre. And once again, we're recording at Nutmeg with our engineer Frank Verderosa. Our guest this week is a writer, producer, and director, and a member of the legendary comedy dream team known as Zazz. Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker. You know his films, of course, like Top Secret, Scary Movie 3, 4, and 5, Basketball, The Onion Movie, Ruthless People, The Naked Gun, Naked Gun 2, The Smell of Fear, Naked Gun 3, The Final Insult, and his debut film, Kentucky Fried Movie, which celebrated its 40th anniversary this year. And last but not least, one of the most quotable and beloved comedies in cinema history, 1980's Airplane, voted one of AFI's top 10 comedies of all time, and preserved in the Library of Congress National Film Registry. He's also co-created the short-lived but much-admired series Police Squad, starring his friend and frequent collaborator Leslie Nielsen, a show that consistently tops the list of TV series canceled before their time. You want more from the guy? He's also produced non-comedic films like A Walk in the Clouds and Phone Booth, as well as short films and TV series. In a career spanning 5 decades, he's worked with a wide assortment of talents such as Peter Cushing, Ernest Borgnine, George Carlin, Bette Midler, William Shatner, Kevin Hart, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Steve Carell, and Donald Sutherland as the clumsy waiter. We're thrilled to welcome to the podcast a bona fide comedy legend and a man who has never once seen Airplane 2, David Zucker.
And I also never saw Avatar. I think that's on my Twitter.
Really?
Thing. Yeah.
How did you manage to avoid
seen,
that?
I don't go to movies that much.
Yeah.
Because I just don't like them. So it's like, I don't like many, you know, my son and four of his friends dragged me to this comedy. And this was about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was going to bring a book and a flashlight, but it turned out to be so. And the comedy was called Bad Grandpa, and I sat there and I loved it. I laughed harder than
with De Niro.
Is it that Bad Grandpa?
No, Bad Grandpa. He did another Grandpa movie.
Oh, he did another Grandpa movie.
This is Johnny Knoxville.
Dirty Grandpa.
This was Bad Grandpa with Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, Johnny Knoxville.
Yes.
Really funny. Really funny. And then the other one I saw, and I just, you know, I have to say that I do like some things.
Yeah.
And Bridesmaids I liked. So these are the comedies I liked. Otherwise, I don't think there's anything that really interests me about movies. But, you know, on TV, it's The Impractical Jokers, who we're all fans of.
Yes. That's where we met.
We were both on
the cruise.
Right.
Invited by the Impractical Jokers.
That's right. And it was an all-gay cruise. So it was, you know, you and I were there, and it was wonderful.
Did you have a better experience than Gilbert did, David? Because he was miserable.
Evidently, because he's alone now. Yeah.
Yes.
So anyways. Yeah.
And you're a birthday boy.
Oh, yeah,
that's my
birthday.
It was my birthday on Monday.
Happy birthday.
Along with Tim Robbins and Angela Lansbury.
Oh, she turned 92.
October 16th. Yeah, thank God I'm not 92.
Now, we'll have to jump right ahead to the movie, yes, that everybody nose, and that's Airplane. How did that come to be?
Well, that was the first movie we ever wrote. We wrote it actually before we wrote Kentucky Fried Movie. And we used to do overdub serious 50s black and white movies. And so, like the kind where the guy would say, what time is it? And the guy would, pull out his hand and say, it's 12 midnight. Very dramatic. And we'd have the guy saying, where's your hand? It's right here at the end of my wrist. just stuff like that. And so we thought, instead of overdubbing a movie, why don't we actually cast these roles with these stiff, old-time, stylized acting?
Yes.
And so that's what Airplane was. So we discovered this movie called Zero Hour, which was done in 1957 with Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, Sterling Hayden. Yeah. And so we bought the rights to that movie, and we just filled in the jokes.
Because it's funny. I didn't remember seeing Zero Hour, and then it came on TV.
Yeah, and it's the same plot.
Yeah.
People get food poisoning. And in fact, you can on YouTube. People have you can Google or not Google on zero on YouTube. Just put in Zero Hour Airplane, and people have done scene for scene.
Oh yeah,
compilations.
Yeah, I found it. It's great.
Yeah,
it's the entire Airplane.
Yeah, right. Well, we never made any secret of it. We just copied this movie because we didn't know how to do a plot or characters or scenes or story arc and. We proved it in Top Secret.
So, and I heard when you first started pitching that movie, the studio wanted comedians in it.
Well, yeah, there was a number of mountains to climb there, too, barriers. And one was that, we were three first-time directors directing together. We wanted to make a comedy without comedians. And it was really to Paramount's credit that they ever did this. And I think... in the end, the budget was low enough. I think it was like $3.2 million. And so they just took a flyer on it. And so we were able to do it. And they did want to cast like Chevy Chase or Bill Murray. Those were the comedians at the time. But we just wanted to cast all these guys. And in fact, only Robert Stack was our first choice. Everybody else was a second or third choice. And I think Leslie Nielsen was fourth on the list.
Was Charlton Heston somebody, too, that you
considered?
Yeah,
Charlton Heston was there. And, he turned it down. Vincent Price turned it down. Ephraim Zimbalist turned it down. A lot of people passed on it. And finally, when we finally cast Leslie Nielsen, the casting director at Paramount at the time just blew up. He had just had it with us and with the casting these stiffs. And he said, Leslie Nielsen? Leslie Nielsen's the guy you cast the night before.
That's hilarious.
And we were already 6 weeks out from principal photography.
I saw Peter Graves, in a reunion about Airplane about 10 years ago, and he was saying that the script offended him when he first read it. He threw it across the room.
They all had various reactions. Peter read the script and said he threw it in the garbage. He said, this is the worst piece of trash I've ever read in my life. Because, he didn't really warm to the whole playing a pedophile concept. So Howard Koch was our executive producer, godfather, put on our team by Paramount, by the studio, to kind of, because we're three directors and they had no idea what was going to happen. So, and he turned out to be our guy at Paramount. And he called Peter and as he did Robert Stack and everybody and said, just come in, meet the boys, as we became known as. And so he met us and we did our aw shucks. We're just three guys from Wisconsin. And actually we were. Yeah. So he agreed to do it.
And what's interesting, you created Airplane. And you also created then the Naked Gun series, which was a takeoff on all the police shows
right.
and movies.
Yeah.
And then it seems like every filmmaker watched the success of those and thought, oh, okay, I think I know how to make those.
Yeah. It's not as easy as that.
Yeah.
We evolved this style over really 10 years from – from when we started in around 1970. And it really, if I can be serious for 2 seconds, you know, it does take discipline. And mm-hmm. we even evolved a set of 15 rules and, you know, the things that we couldn't do. And we really thought about why things were funny. And in addition to, we had our show, our live show on Pico called Kentucky Fried Theater, which we ran for 5 years. And we really, you know, we thought about how to do this. And it does take a lot of discipline. And, you know, you can't just put in jokes willy-nilly and do anything. There's a certain motivation for it.
And what the other movies seem to do, like, I mean, Airplane, 99% of the people who saw it were not familiar with Zero Hour, but right. it was still funny.
Yeah, they didn't need to be because it was a, you know, your generic airliner in yes. trouble disaster movie. And there had been 100 of them all through the 70s. And so the 80s, you know, the 1980 was the perfect timing to do this.
And what I've noticed with the other movies, it would be like, let's dress someone up like the character in some current movie, and if we all recognize it, that's comedy.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, we had this, one of our rules was knocking down the posts, so it's not enough to just do the reference, and we had to learn this because there was a scene in Airplane from a movie called Since You Went Away, and one of these 1940s black and white movies, where the girl is saying goodbye to her soldier boyfriend, and he's going away on the train, and she's running along the platform.
Oh, yeah.
So we do that in Airplane, and she's running along the runway. And so we thought it would get big laughs just to see her running along the plane. People would think, oh, that's funny because it's a spoof on these old 40s movies. But nobody laughed until she started knocking down the posts of the, you know, the platform.
Oh, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
so that was got the laugh. So you can't just doing a reference wasn't enough. So we tried to learn from all these things.
And you and Jerry and Jim sat down and you had these 15 rules.
Well,
you knew them.
Jerry and Jim did very little. It was mainly me doing all the movies. You're supposed to laugh. Okay. No, of course I'm kidding, but we evolved these rules together
through the Kentucky Fried Theater
through
days.
Through the Kentucky Fried Theater yeah. days. Well, it really, yeah, the first rule started when some friend of Jim's named Alan Mandel came to, and he was a comedy writer, and this was in 1972 when we did our first show, and he said, yeah, your show is great, but in the 10 minutes in, you do this such and such a joke, and it's a joke on a joke, and you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to us to even think that there were any kind of rules. So that was our first rule, is joke on a joke.
Oh, yeah.
While Gilbert tries to remember who our guest is.
And what's your name?
A few words from our sponsor.
Oh, Gilbert.
Ooh.
The holidays are coming up, Gil.
Yes.
So why not give yourself the gift of Stitcher Premium? They have an incredible Black Friday deal going on that you will not want to miss. You get 50% off your first payment for a limited time when you go to StitcherPremium.com/Black Friday. Black Friday, also the name of a Karloff Lugosi picture.
I remember that one.
And you use the promo code Black Friday. That's $17.50 for an entire year of Stitcher Premium. Such a deal. Spend cozy winter nights binging on shows like The Complete Wedding, Stolen Idea, Hollywood Masterclass, and Questions for Lennon. I'm assuming that's the Lennon sisters. Listen to new episodes each week of premium shows like Big Grande, Teacher's Lounge, as Gilbert's cell phone goes off. Yet again, even though we told him to turn it off.
I thought I did.
Dozens of times.
That's what makes it worse. I thought I did
go
turn it off.
Go to StitcherPremium.com/Black Friday and use the promo code Gilbert. What's the promo code?
Gilbert.
No, it's Black Friday.
Black Friday.
50% off your first payment.
Oh, wait. No.
It's over.
on the next Gilbert and Frank's Colossal Obsessions.
I don't know if we talked about this, but I got into a conversation with Jackie the Joke Man. And you know how in Hollywood Boulevard, she's having a funeral for her pet chimp?
Yes, in Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard, right, right. I mean. And according to legend,
yeah,
these old actresses and rich women,
oh, I know where you're going
in L.A.,
with this,
would train chimps to go down on them.
I will never look at J. Fred Muggs the same way.
Good boy.
But, wow. But now Planet of the Apes gives me a hard on.
It's Gil and Frank, Colossal Obsessions. It's Gil and Frank, Exotic Possessions. It's Gil and Frank, Your Deepest Confessions to Gil and Frank. They now control you, so give up.
Oh, you doesn't have to call me Johnson. My name is Raymond J. Johnson, Jr. Now, you can call me Ray, or you can call me Jay, or you can call me Johnny, or you can call me Sonny, or you can call me Junie, or you can call me Ray J, or you can call me RJ, or you can call me RJJ, or you can call me RJJ, Jr. But you doesn't have to call me Johnson. And ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, wonderful, funny, hysterical podcast.
Live from Nutmeg Post, we now return to Gilbert and Frank's amazing, colossal podcast.
I noticed with Leslie Nielsen, in the beginning, it was funny because he was the Leslie Nielsen of the B-movies.
Right, yeah.
And but then he started to realize, hey, I'm getting laughs.
Well, what happened was other directors and filmmakers thought, hey, this guy's funny. And then they just thought,
forgot to play
put him
straight
in the movie as if he were Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
And then just let him riff, but Leslie, you know, had a particular skill, you know, within a structured format and doing, you know, the particular jokes like we did in The Naked Gun, where he could be successful. But
right,
if he was put in a position where he had to be funny.
Well, he's in the Fugitive parody, Wrongfully Accused, and there's an Exorcist one, but they play it broadly, whereas you guys were playing it straight like a genre picture.
I guess so. I think that he was. I think he was good in the Fugitive parody.
Yeah.
But in some of the other ones, I think it was they played it too broadly.
Yeah, because what you did with him was, you know, it's like he was hijacked out of one of his early pictures.
Yeah, and well, just other directors thought, hey, let's just put Leslie in a movie and. And we're home free, so it didn't really work that way.
Another one they threw Leslie Nielsen in that's trying to be Airplane and Naked Gun and all the others was a 2001 A Space Tragedy or Space something like that.
Missed that one. I know he was in an Exorcist parody called Repossessed.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they were,
and then there was the Dracula, Mel Brooks' Dracula movie.
Yeah.
And they were all like, things of yeah, like, hey, we both saw this film.
Yeah.
So that means satire.
Right.
You really wanted Robert Stack. You thought Robert Stack was going to be the linchpin.
Well, he was the one. We wrote it for Robert Stack. Everybody else was, you know, was interchangeable. But Robert Stack, we were prepared to camp out on his front lawn until he did it. Because it was just nobody else that could have that weight. I mean, possibly Charlton Heston, but Charlton Heston didn't want to do it. So
right, and with him, you've got the airport,
right,
background.
And in fact, Universal was not happy about our doing this parody of their airport series. And so we actually, George Kennedy was one of our choices for one of the roles, And I think they prevented George from doing it. But finally, we were able to cast him in The Naked Gun.
And,
you're blanking on it.
You're not 70 also, are
yes.
you? Jeez, it strikes.
You're thinking of Lloyd Bridges?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the funny thing with Robert Stack is one of the things it seems he was famous for when you watch him, he never smiled.
Yeah, he was like, he was so deadpan and so humorless in all of his roles. But, you know, in person, he was a wonderful, wonderful person and full of jokes. He was always
That's interesting.
Telling stories and jokes. And very proud of having just been in Spielberg's 1941.
Oh, he's good in that. Yeah. He's funny.
And he thought that was going to be a big hit.
General Stilwell.
General Stilwell.
He's funny.
Because he seems like someone, if you met him in real life, he'd be like, you know, a stone.
Yeah, but he's a great guy. He was a great guy, yeah.
Is this bullshit, or did you guys show him a tape of John Biner impersonating him?
No, but this is a good question you're asking, because what we did, we wrote this one line. It's his ship now, his command, he's the boss, the big cheese. And that was from a John Biner routine from, I think, Vaughn Meader's album about JFK.
Oh, First Family.
First Family.
Wow.
And John Biner was doing Robert Stack, or it was either from that or just John Biner on The Tonight Show or something.
That's
doing
fun.
This. So we remembered that, and so we actually wrote it for Robert Stack. And so we get it on the set, and we're doing the take, and Robert Stack goes, it's his ship now, his command. He's in charge. He's the boss. He said, no, Bob. We want you to do it, and we didn't want to say, like, Elliot Ness.
Oh, wow.
So Jerry was following Robert Stack around the set, saying, giving him line readings to be Robert Stack.
That's hilarious.
No joke. Yeah, and Jerry's doing John Biner to Robert Stack.
We had John Biner here.
Oh, really?
On this show, yeah.
Does he even know this?
I don't know. We'll tell him.
If you ever see him, tell him we absolutely use that.
We'll reach out.
Yeah.
He's in Florida.
I heard that happened with Peter Lorre, where they wanted him to come on and just say, hi, I'm Peter Lorre. And he went, hi, I'm Peter Lorre. And they said, no, it's, hey, I'm Peter Lorre.
That's the exact story. Yeah, that's it. You have to get these guys. Yeah.
I heard Bridges, his kids talked him into doing it, too, that he was similarly reluctant.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was reluctant, but his kids loved the script. And I think, you know, Peter Graves' daughter loved it and his wife loved it. And they were sitting behind me, the Graves family, at the premiere. It's the first time they saw it. And they laughed so hard. And Peter laughed along with everybody. And Stack also loved it. But it was bittersweet for him because he was offered points on the back end, lots of points.
Oh,
and he took the money up front instead.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
So he said after the premiere, he said, never in my life have I been so wrong about anything, you know, any movie. So and he and Leslie, they told me later that they kind of said privately to each other, you know, the shit hitting the fan. He said, that's never going to work. That's just never. The boys have gone too far. It's never going to work.
One of the great gags in the film.
Yes.
And tell us about one of your favorite films, Airplane 2.
Oh, yeah, Airplane 2. No, we never saw it. None of us ever saw it.
To this day. It takes some doing.
But
you know,
why?
You know,
but I don't see every movie.
It's interesting. And you don't even have a perverse curiosity.
Have a curiosity.
Isn't that fascinating?
And it's probably even the opposite. It would be painful
to
watch it. And to watch, you know, Bob and Julie and I think Peter and Lloyd were in it. But and we get asked this a lot. You know, we do a Q&A after we screen Airplane. Why didn't you see Airplane 2? And Jim Abrams said, well, if your daughter became a prostitute, would you go watch her work?
Wow.
So that's really the accurate thing.
Kind of sums it up.
Yeah.
I saw it, and really all it is, you know, The best of Airplane. They just repeated.
They repeated the jokes.
Is there a Mad Bomber thing like Van Heflin in Airport with Sonny Bono?
They repeat like 90% of it.
I've never seen it all the way through either.
Is a rerun of Airplane.
Was Pete Rose originally in the Kareem
part? Pete Rose was originally written for that Kareem role. And I've read some of the old scripts, and it just didn't go very far.
Right.
And then what happened was we shot Airplane in the summer of 79, and it was baseball season, and Pete Rose couldn't make it, so we had to get Kareem, which was yet another fortunate turn of events. And then we wrote so much more with the whole thing about him not trying to the playoffs. And,
right.
Yeah.
Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up the court.
It was just perfect.
Just great.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor. When you were doing Naked Gun, did O.J. Simpson say at any point that he was planning on killing two people?
You know, he never came out and said that.
He's been waiting to ask that question.
He was always a nice guy, and I really didn't know anything about what was going on, because I guess he had beat up Nicole a few times. And I don't read the papers or know anything that's going on. But he was always nice to everyone, except for one time. Jerry and Jim and I had an office together in Brentwood. And for our hold music, the phone, instead of music, we played Howard Cosell reading his book. So Howard Cosell's going, "The juice was crying on the phone. I told Emmy to talk to him. I couldn't take it any longer." So I would do that as just a goof. And they all said, "You got to do it for OJ. You got to do it for the OJ." I said, No, I don't want to do it. Come on. You got to do it. So I did. And oh my God, he just suddenly got dark and not the nice OJ we all knew. He just said, "This is bullshit, man. Never happened. Bullshit. Never happened." Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of a glimpse.
A little glimpse. It was like I had never seen that side of him before.
So he's someone who had the angry side.
Definitely. He did have an angry side, evidently. But I mean, I never saw it. I never saw him socially. I mean, I just, the last time I ever saw him was the rap party for Naked Gun 33 and a third. You know, I shook hands, said goodbye, sold him my knife collection, and that was the last time I ever saw him. I never saw him again.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
He's been waiting to ask that since you were booked, David.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about another piece of casting, because I saw you guys just doing some research.
I'm sorry, that's the end of the casting questions. Let's move on. No, I'm sorry. Just go ahead.
Saw the three of you guys on an old Letterman episode, and you tortured him, pulling out his audition tape for Airplane.
So, yeah, we auditioned a number of people for Airplane, and Letterman came in and read, and he was really funny. He even came in to read for Kentucky Fried Movie, and he was great in that. Anyway, so he we actually screen tested him, but he didn't really want to be an actor, and I think Jerry talked to his agent, and Jerry said, you know, he was really good. He really made us laugh. He'd be great if he did it. And the agent said, "Fat chance," something like that. You know, David did not want to be an actor. He's
right.
And if you think of it, you know, he is that kind of comic that
he did some variety.
Acting is lying, really.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's just so real about stuff.
I saw him in one acting part. I think it was Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, he did a Mork and Mindy. Embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
So
he would turn up. He was in Mary Tyler Moore's variety show, Repertory Company, with Michael Keaton. He's very embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
And just cringes when people bring it up.
Yeah.
And wasn't he in Starlight Vocal Band?
He was in their variety series, the Starland Vocal Band.
Yeah.
Yeah, before he was a talk show host, I mean, he was a comic in L.A. casting
You have to do
about
something. Oh, you should see some of the stuff Woody Allen did.
Oh, yes.
He dressed up as a kangaroo?
He fought a kangaroo. He boxed a kangaroo.
It's hard to believe now. Humiliating stuff.
He's dancing and with a top hat and cane.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's
when
really,
you see interiors, you can't imagine that he was boxing a kangaroo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but everybody had something embarrassing.
Tell us about Barbara Billingsley and the jive scene, which I guess is a scene you in a movie that you can't do nowadays, probably.
I don't know. We get that question sometimes. Who knows? I mean, it's just, 1980 was, one particular space and time. And at the time, we wanted to, that was pushing the envelope. And we wanted to do something on this black jive. And so who's the whitest person on the planet? Probably, Barbara Billingsley or Harriet Nelson, as it turns out.
Right.
So, and actually, we met with Harriet Nelson first.
You did?
Yeah.
That's wild.
No, she turned it down. It's a little bit too edgy for her.
Oh, yeah.
So, but Barbara Billingsley was totally game for it. So.
Can I get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying into the bone, jacking me up. Take me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound on the med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get the help.
Say can't hang. Say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in here.
I love this trivia, too. Is it the actors, when you were having trouble casting the people to do the voices over the announcements at LAX?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't trouble. We just, we wanted to cast voices that sounded like those recorded announcements. So it turned out that it was the husband and wife team that sold the equipment to the airport that does these announcements.
So the
dialogue was from a bad B level novel. It was one of these romance novels. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about, Vernon, tell the truth. You want me to have an abortion? And, we just copied it right from there.
And your mom's in the film.
Mom's in that and 17 other movies.
Right.
And my mom's the lady who's trying to apply lipstick, and it smears on her cheek. Yeah.
And now Naked Gun.
And in Naked Gun, she was Ricardo Montalban's assistant, the one that says, I must kill Pap Schmidt.
Right.
That's my mom.
That's great. That's great.
Of course, she's dead now. You guys had to bring that up. It kind of brings me down a little bit.
I was
having fun until now.
You guys used a lot of family members.
We did. My sister's in every movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She's.
I remember. Yeah. And there was a Beaver thing, because Tony Dow, the connection between Barbara Billingsley.
It was our favorite show, Leave It to Beaver. And Jerry and I were in many ways, Beaver and Wally.
Right. Yeah. I remember Jerry. Is it Jerry playing Beaver?
Jerry played Beaver in the Kentucky Fried movie with Tony Dow. Yeah.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about Kentucky Fried Theater, which started in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's how far the three of you guys go back. Mm-hmm. To high school, actually?
To high school. We all knew each other in high school. Of course, I don't think Jerry was even in the high school, not even in seventh grade when Jim was a senior. I was probably in eighth grade. Jim was a senior. But our families were friends. Our fathers were actually business partners. It was a real estate firm called Abrahams and Zucker. And our mothers were close friends, and our sisters were college roommates, so the families were really close, and the families would get together. And more often than not, Jim and Jerry and I would end up in our basement rec room playing ping pong and just talking and, sharing. We really did have a shared sense of humor. And it did come from Milwaukee. Milwaukee was a place where things didn't come from. They came to, and so... And I think Kentucky Fried Theater was our way of throwing everything back. It was satires on media, not politics at all. We thought what was funny was the media. What we were seeing in TV and the movies, culture.
There was a student newspaper review.
Yeah.
That kind of turned you guys in a positive direction.
Well, our first show was a disaster.
Tech problems. Say,
tech problems. And because Jerry and Dick Chudnow, one of our original partners, lived in Madison, and they were in school there, and then Jim and I lived in Milwaukee. And so we put this show together in two different cities, and we had never rehearsed it all the way through. So after 25 minutes, we were out of material, and it was an hour and a half show.
Right.
So we called a hasty conference, and we decided, well, we'll call it intermission.
Oh, smart.
And our other partner, Dick Chudnow, was brilliant at improv, and he kept the audience entertained for like an hour with improv and games. And while Jerry and Jim and I were debating how much money to refund, we just totally panicked. We just
hilarious.
Totally lost it. Yeah. But anyway, so we thought it was a disaster. And so there was a review in the school newspaper that said, this is an amazing show. It's great. And
wow.
It kind of saved us, this one review. And
fate.
So we had the, you know, the confidence and, you know, to go on. So so we got a permanent theater, which was, you know, we remodeled from the back of a bookstore just off campus. And we called it the Kentucky Fried Theater.
How long did you guys stay in Madison before you made the move to
LA? We were one year
LA?
In Madison, and I remember we could only charge $1 a ticket, and there were 70 seats, and we were able to buy videotape equipment. We weren't able to pay our salaries or anything.
Right.
We paid the rent. So we loaded up a U-Haul truck and moved to LA. To Pico Boulevard,
yeah.
Where we found an old warehouse that we remodeled into a theater. This time it was 150 seats, and that was very good. We could charge $2 a ticket.
Did you have movie aspirations at this point? I mean, the airplane script was
know,
already.
We didn't know really what we were going to be. We thought we were going to be a performing group. There used to be this group that appeared on the Tonight Show every couple of weeks called Ace Trucking.
Oh, sure, yes. Sure.
And
with
we
Patty
thought,
Deutsch and
I guess,
yeah.
And there was a fat guy. And
was
there
Billy
this.
Saluga in the Ace Trucking Company?
I think so.
I think he was.
And we thought, you know, they were funny, but we thought we could do that. There's something we could do. So that's one of the reasons why we moved out to L.A. So sure enough, Tonight Show came. They saw the show. We had an audition along with the Pitchell Players and the committee. And Kentucky
Committee.
Fried Theater,
wow,
and we got the gig, so we were on the Tonight Show. But you know, it didn't set the world on fire, you know, because our stuff really didn't come off on TV.
I saw you guys on the Midnight Special.
Yeah, we were on
in
a
1974.
Midnight Special.
That's
yeah.
The first time I saw you guys.
Right? Oh, really?
Yeah. Bert Sugarman's Midnight Special.
Yeah, we were in a bunch of other shows, and I used to say, you know, we made a joint decision with the networks not to do any more television. So, you know, we decided to, so we recast the show, and we did a show called, and we recast it with four of the actors from the show, and called the show My Nose, so that our listing in the LA Times calendar section would read, My Nose Runs Continuously. And that's our way of, yeah. So, And that year, we wrote Airplane. We wrote the script to Airplane. And then we couldn't sell it. Nobody would finance it. So we decided, we did a combination of the first show that we did, which was called Vegetables, and Beating a Dead Horse, and called it, My Nose and Vegetables, we combined to be a new show called Beating a Dead Horse. That was...
And
so that's what we did in mm-hmm. 1976.
And Naked Gun actually started as a TV series.
Yeah, that was a TV series because after Airplane, we didn't have an idea of what to do. So we love this. There was an old TV series called M Squad.
With Lee Marvin.
With Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
And he was the template, you know, he was the Robert Stack character. And so that's what we cast Leslie Nielsen that, call it Police Squad. And then, you know, and made it.
In color.
In color, a spoof on all those Quinn Martin shows.
Right.
Police Squad in color.
And, right. Great
and
gag.
Tonight's guest star, and we showed the guest star would be killed in the first two minutes.
Yep, yep.
And so that was a budgetary matter. So,
was a little M Squad, a little Felony Squad kind of a.
I don't know. I don't know if that we did Felony Squad, but.
But you got the guy that did the Quinn Martin.
Yeah, we got the actual Quinn Martin.
Sims, wasn't his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure he's dead now.
He may be dead.
Yeah.
How many episodes did you actually do?
We shot six episodes, and it was canceled after four. And they couldn't cancel it fast enough. They showed the last two episodes during the summer. And, you know, there was an outcry, I think, from the critics because they liked it. And there was a press conference in which the head of ABC, Tony Thomopoulos, had to answer for this. And he said, Police Squad didn't work because you had to watch it. You know,
yeah,
famous quote.
I love that.
Yeah.
Great quote. A show you had to actually sit and watch. Yeah.
Now, when you announced you were going to make Police Squad into a movie, you must have had people going, what from that?
Well, it wasn't, you know, we went into, this was after we did Top Secret and Ruthless People. And then we were kind of, at that point, Jerry and Jim and I were going off in our separate directions. And so Jerry wanted to do Ghost, and he started working on that. Jim did a movie called Big Business.
Oh, yeah, Bette Midler.
Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin. And I really wanted to do Police Squad as a movie. And what we needed was to do a real plot, character, and story arc. And so, you know, we learned from doing Ruthless People with Dale Launer and just...
Because you guys didn't write Ruthless People.
We didn't write Ruthless People.
Yeah.
Dale Launer did. And you know, we didn't write the plot to Airplane. I mean, we thought we knew what we were doing. We really didn't. So we went back and so we did the plot and we did The Naked Gun. And Jerry and Jim and I and Pat Proft each wrote a quarter of the Naked Gun, the first draft. And then I took it and wrote the next, you know, 10 or 20 drafts and kept writing every day on the set. And so, and that became The Naked Gun and that became a franchise. It was very successful.
It may be one of the few successful film franchises spun off from a
failed
TV series.
Show. I don't know.
I don't know if there was another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a unique
situation.
We pitched it to Paramount with Frank Mancuso, and it was the easiest pitch we ever had. He just said, yes, let's do it.
You'd think they go,
you'd think they was, what, are you crazy? But
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the series is funny. I mean, and there's so much going for it. Ira Newborn's music is great.
Yeah, it just wasn't
song.
Right for TV. It just wasn't. You know, we were making, you know, little half-hour movies, and people don't watch TV the way they watch movies. And so I guess in a TV show you need, you know, you watch in your house, you know, without an audience there, and it probably needs a laugh track. And you want to see another family on TV. And we were, you know, kind of not doing all those rules. It's possible that today, with there's so many different things on TV, maybe it would be more successful.
Well, you have a different landscape now. You had three networks.
Yeah, three networks. Yes.
You could conceive of it now as a Showtime show or an HBO show or
you think that it would have succeeded with only three networks.
But
no. Yeah. So I can't make any other excuses for it except that it really didn't work.
It's so hip, David. You watch it even now and it's time.
Even with
All my flops, I just say they're ahead of their time.
Well, that one was.
Yes.
So even with no competition.
No competition. It was like it was gone after four episodes. Yikes.
Do you feel up to any questions?
I'll try.
Where were you when all this happened?
I was right here at my desk working.
And when was the first time you noticed something was wrong?
Well, when I first heard the shot, and as I turned, Jim fell.
Say, he's a teller, Frank.
Jim Fell's a teller?
No, Jim Johnson.
Who's Jim Fell?
He's the auditor, Frank.
He had the flu, so Jim filled in.
Phil who?
Filled in. He's the night watchman, Frank.
Bully Phil had been here.
All right, now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Twice came in and shot the teller and Jim Fell.
No, he only shot the teller, Jim Johnson. Fell is ill.
Okay, then after he shot the teller, you shot twice.
No, I only shot once.
Twice is the holdup man.
Then I guess I did shoot twice.
Well, so now you're changing your story.
No, I shot twice after Jim fell.
You shot twice and Jim fell?
No, Jim fell first, and then I shot twice once.
Well, who fired twice?
Once.
Now, he's the owner of the tire company, Frank.
Okay. Once is the owner of the tire company, and he fired twice. Then twice shot the teller once.
Twice.
And Jim fell, and then you fired twice.
Once.
Okay. All right, that'll be all for now, Miss Decker.
Now, we'll need you to make a formal statement down at the station.
Oh, of course.
You've been very helpful. We think we know how he did it.
Oh, how he couldn't have done it. He hasn't been in for weeks.
Well, thank you again, Miss Decker.
Why didn't George Kennedy do this one either? Was he approached again? Or because Alan North plays the part that George Kennedy winds up playing.
I don't know.
In the franchise. Yeah.
I think we wanted to save money, I think.
You know, there also wasn't a lot of absurdism in primetime television at that time.
No, there was nothing like it. This was absurdism, which was barely started in the movies. I mean, we were doing it in the movies, and it was...
With Rex Hamilton as Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, I think television audiences watched and said, what is this?
Right. You know, Lincoln gets a shot at in every opening sequence.
Lincoln returns fire.
He returns fire. There's just so much going for it. And they really hold up quite well. The DVD set is great, even though there's only six.
Yeah.
You want to watch them over and over again.
And the best jokes we've used in the Naked Guns, like, you know, when they walk from one room to the other and Leslie goes outside the set and passes the guy's whose head is out of frame,
mm-hmm.
and he says, you got something on the side of your mouth, Al. No, the other side. And then a whole chunk of banana falls down.
There had been spoofs. I mean, there had been things like Get Smart, but the way you guys were doing
it was different.
You were breaking the fourth wall in every conceivable way. You were doing, like I said, surrealism.
Yeah, it was
in primetime.
Yeah,
because what you know was things that have been called spoofs that really weren't. It's kind of like
What you mean since Airplane or before Airplane?
Before.
Yeah. Before. Well, you know, Mel Brooks did Blazing Saddles,
sure.
which was really
sure.
a spoof on Westerns, but he did it with comedians. And Young Frankenstein was a spoof on those horror movies, but it was also with comedians. And they were funny, but a completely different style. We
yours
totally
was a different animal.
Yeah.
And what also used to be called, like when they call Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is spoof.
Right.
It's just that's, you're combining.
Yeah, I suppose that was a spoof, but not in the Airplane way.
Because they weren't really. They were respectful of the
monsters.
Yeah,
so these two guys. Well, it was like Chevy Chase and Aykroyd did a movie called Spies Like Us.
Sure.
And there were some very funny things in that.
John Landis.
And because it was ostensibly they were spies in a serious thing, but they were doing these routines much like Hope and Crosby.
It's sort of a Hope and Crosby movie. Yeah, which Ishtar was intending to be also a Hope and Crosby
movie. Yeah, but you still need comedians. You need Chevy Chase, who's...
Yep.
You know, if you watch Chevy Chase in those movies, he's amazing. He's so funny. He's so amazing.
Because he looks like he's another of, like, that professionals of... he looks like he's doing nothing.
Yeah, effortless. It's like, you know, in acting, you know, Steve McQueen could act and, you know, as though he wasn't trying at all. You know, the best actors are just effortless.
And
Chevy was actually intrinsically funny and didn't have to try. I don't think Aykroyd was very successful at it, but didn't have those kind of chops.
Interesting.
And I remember sitting at a table and I heard two people talking. And one said, was Jack Benny ever funny? And the other one said, no, there were funny people on the show and he just kind of stood there. And I thought, yeah.
Missing the whole thing. It's like missing the talent of Mary Tyler Moore, who,
yes,
she played Mary Tyler Moore, but, you know, and she was surrounded by crazies, but she was a master.
Well, she had to be the straight man, but she also had to be funny.
She was funny. Yeah, yeah. She was very funny. Yeah.
It's just like they tend to ignore the straight men in comedy teams. Like, oh, it's the funny guy who's
Yeah, Dean Martin was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. Bud Abbott, too.
Bud Abbott, yeah.
Bud Abbott, underrated. I thought, was when you really watch those Abbott and Costello movies, yeah. Bud Abbott is hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, even when you're watching Burns and Allen.
Oh, yeah.
And she's getting the laughs, but he's.
Yes.
But, you know,
he's goddamn good at what he does.
You know, who's on first is an interesting routine because Costello is the funny guy. He's the crazy funny guy, but he's the straight man in it.
Yes.
And Bud Abbott is the serious one, and he's doing the funny line.
Never thought of that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a complete reversal, and it's the only instance that I can ever remember where anyone did that.
That's true. And it's also like—
See, you guys had never thought of this before.
No,
I'm brilliant.
That's pretty heady
actually.
Stuff.
Yes, right.
And what's also funny about it is the premise itself is completely ridiculous that they'd have these names, but Abbott— sells it.
He sells it, and I don't remember that ever being done before. I mean, we've, you know, copied that, you know, and other people have. I mean, we did, you know, we've done a Who's On First in almost every movie that we did, you know, start with Airplane. Well, we did in Kentucky Fried Movie, we did who are these? These are just lost drunken men who don't know who they are and no longer care. And who are these men? These are lost men who know where they are and care, but don't drink. You know, it's just like, so it's kind of that.
Well,
these are men who know
you...
where they in car, but but it kept going. You know, we just played with words. And then in Airplane, I think we did, how soon can we land? I can't tell. You can tell me, I'm a doctor. So it's that word.
Well, you've also got Roger Over and
Roger
Mayo,
Over. That's the,
and,
yes.
And all that
over
stuff.
Roger, yeah. That stuff. So we've always been fascinated with that. With those words, and even, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, with the way things sound, you know, Don't Call Me Shirley, those kind of.
One of the fun things about Airplane is every imaginable kind of comedy is in there.
There's a lot of, yeah.
There's
sight
gags.
It's not just physical, it's sight gags, yeah. It's and then we did some weirdness, like this Robert Stack mirror scene where he steps through a mirror, because we always wanted to do stuff like that. And then we did a lot of that in Top Secret.
Yeah, you play with perspective in Top Secret. There's the giant phone.
That's
there's
right, the giant phone.
The magnifying glass with Peter
all
Cushing.
All that stuff. Just it's so the visual puns.
Yeah,
and we just had so much fun doing that.
There's one takeoff on that line you've heard in a million movies, and it's like he's being held captive, and they say, you know, the foreign guy says, "You have become." How do you say irreplaceable?
Indispensable?
Indispensable.
And Val Kilmer says, indispensable. And the guy says, that's what I thought.
Yes. How are those actors do?
Because they always say, how do you say?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, the accent guys. Yeah.
How are those actors doing comedy? I mean, Omar Sharif and Peter Cushing.
Yeah, first of all, they never get to do comedy, so they all love it. And so that's why Stack wanted to do it. I think Graves, despite, you know, his misgivings about the script, and they all want to do comedy. Everybody wants to have fun. So
and
Cushing was fun,
that I think you used in two of your movies, and it's certainly in Top Secret, is they go in a room and there's boxes there, and one says like explosive, dynamite, and the next box says a must see. So it was like blurbs.
Is that in Top Secret?
I don't think you. That may have been from Airplane 2.
Yeah.
I think I'm done here now.
You've confused your Zucker picture with your Zucker ripoff.
But I think there were two.
I don't remember that gag, but you know, some people come up to me and say, I saw your Airplane movie. The funniest gag is, and then they'll say something that I never heard of. It's from Airplane 2.
The underwater fight scene is just, I mean,
yeah.
how you guys even thought of that and then managed to execute it.
Yeah, yeah, that was done, of course, you know, like a minute and a half at a time. You know, we undercranked the film so
it's
that
great.
It would go slightly faster.
And Kilmer, talking about committing, you're talking about his commitment. And was he a Kentucky Fright Theater fan?
He was, yeah. He was a big ZAZ fan. He loved Airplane and Kentucky Fried Movie. And we were casting. We were trying to find somebody to play Nick Rivers. And Jerry and Jim and I went to New York. And we saw a play, an off-Broadway play called Slab Boys with Val and Sean Penn and somebody else who was later became very well-known.
He's great in the picture. And, he really commits.
Yeah, he's great.
And you had no trouble with Val Kilmer.
Well, I wouldn't say no trouble. he was kind of quiet and he would have his moods. You know, you never know which Val we'd get. But, you know, we all liked him, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And then later we thought back on it. We thought, well, maybe it was because we really didn't write him a character. He had no character. You know, actors really need to play a character.
Yeah.
And, we took the wrong lessons from Airplane. We just thought, well, you just fill, 85 minutes with jokes, and that's what we have to do. But there was he didn't really have a character. So that may have been part of the problem. But he was a little moody. And I remember one time, we were at a party together and we were just sitting on the side together. And I didn't have much of a relationship with him. I was just in some kind of a mood that night. And I said, I hate everyone. And he turned to me and said, hey. And it was like he connected with me. Yeah. I hate everybody. And it's like he was, for one night, we had a great time and we talked. And like, we bonded, yeah.
Are you aware there's a movie, a documentary called Jews in Baseball that opens with the scene from Airplane?
I did not know that.
Yeah, that opens with the scene, the great Jewish sports legends.
Pamphlet?
Yeah.
Yeah,
which Gilbert appreciates.
I want some like light reading or like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tiny book.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Going back to Kentucky Fried Movie, and I'm sure you guys get asked this a lot. And you just did was it in April or June? You did a 40th anniversary.
Yeah, it was one of those anniversaries. Yeah, I think we did it at somewhere in L.A. Yeah.
How much from Kentucky Fried Theater survived and found its way into the movie? Was Fistful of Yen in the stage show?
Fistful of Yen was completely new for the movie. But we did the Sex Record.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was from the stage show. And yeah, Big Jim Slade we did on stage. and there was a bunch of things from
Cleopatra Schwartz was
no,
that
was
also,
that
also
was
written
for
the movie.
That was for the movie. But there was Danger Seekers.
That's a bold one.
There's an out on the edge there.
There's a ballsy piece of comedy.
Yeah, and that was from the show. And yeah, there's I think about half the material from and then Jacques Cousteau, that thing where the mic goes. We did that on stage, and the couple making out watching the newscaster. We did that on stage with it. We had a monitor, a TV monitor mounted on stage.
So you kind of had an idea. We know what works. We
yeah,
have enough
we,
that we
know
what works.
We knew half the stuff was going to work, and then we just the other stuff. We just we were confident, and I think and John Landis added jokes. that where the lady is the TV host. Has the little gerbil, and she says, that's very cute and everything. He says, now what are we bringing out here next? And she just throws it over her shoulder, just throws it away. That was completely Landis. And so he added a lot of great
stuff. You guys had never been on a film set at that point.
We had never been.
And there's Bill Bixby and George Lazenby and Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, and we didn't know what a director did or what. And so Landis took us through every phase of the whole thing from pre-production, casting, the actual directing, and to his credit, he took a lot of our suggestions. You know, we were all back on watching the monitor and making suggestions, and he didn't take all of them, but he for a director,
yeah,
he was pretty good about it.
Yeah, I have to say, even by 2017 standards, and I'll say this to our listeners if they haven't seen it, it's still pretty ballsy. It's still pretty edgy.
I think, you know, half of it still works if you can watch the right half of it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and the commercial parodies are good. You guys knew how to do those.
Yeah, we just, and a lot of them we had done, you know, like household odors. We did on stage, you know, so we did video on stage. We had a video monitor. So
now, Donald Sutherland, I heard, is another one of those guys who could be in any mood.
Well, I don't know, because that was completely through Landis.
Yeah.
John knew him,
right,
had worked with him, and then he was just there for one day. And
I barely
said hello, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was such a big star. It was amazing.
Oh, yes.
We got Donald Sutherland. I didn't even get my picture with him.
Yeah, you guys.
For some reason. Jerry and I spent an hour with Bob Hope here in New York, and this was in 1982, I think. And he told dirty jokes.
What was the context? Why?
He had seen Airplane. He liked Airplane, and we knew Rick Ludwin, who knew Bob Hope, produced a lot of his specials. And so we said, yeah, we'd love to meet Bob Hope. So he arranged it, and we spent an hour with Bob Hope. But the reason I'm mentioning it is because this was before cell phones, where routinely you'd take a picture.
Right, of course.
And so we don't have a picture with Bob Hope. So,
well, I always think whenever they mention the Zapruder film, I think there's one of the biggest moments in history, and there's that grainy little...
Yeah, just one
film.
Guy filming. Yeah. Now,
yeah,
if that happened today...
From every single angle,
there would be a million, yeah.
There'd be too many.
Yeah, there'd be too many, yeah.
I found this was fun in my research, David. You were skeptical about Jerry doing Ghosts?
I have to preface this with saying, I wanted to do Naked Gun. And he said, do you really want to go back to that stuff?
So then
he gives me Ghost. I read the script and said, I don't know. I don't get it. You know, no matter how you slice it, you end up with a dead guy at the end.
Right, pretty much.
Like, how smart was that? So, you know, so we have not been each other's best cheerleader and, you know, guide to what to do.
You have different ideas of what
make
good movies.
We have different ideas, yeah, totally. But I think it's hard for me. I hate reading scripts. It's just so hard for me to concentrate on a script. And also, you know, what Jerry did with that in the casting and the direction, and, you know, he added so much to it, and it was so entertaining. And Bruce Rubin, who's a great guy, and I got to know, the story is when he, you know, his baby, you know, he wrote this script, when he heard that Jerry Zucker was going to direct it, he cried.
Really?
Yeah, because here's this goofball Airplane, you know, shit hitting the fan, crazy guy.
Wow.
And so Jerry knew that Bruce had misgivings. So Jerry said, Bruce, let's just go out to dinner. Or maybe Bruce said, let's just go out to dinner, not talk about the movie or anything, just go out to dinner. So they did. And they
I like Jacob's Ladder too, which he wrote, which Bruce Joel Rubin, right?
Yeah. I guess so,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty good
and
movie.
Another person from the Naked Gun movies, much like O.J. to go on to Scandal, you had Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah, she was, yeah. And well, she was in Naked Gun 3, and, you know, the first time she read for the part, you know, we put her on tape, and everybody thought, oh, it's too bad, you know, she can't do it. And so I said, wait a minute, let me work with her for, you know, 20 minutes. So we went into the room. I told her how I wanted her to do the part. And she went back, and everybody said, yeah, she can do it. Yeah, it's okay. So she's fine. And then, you know, later, you know, I premiered the movie at the White House. I was invited by Bill and Hillary, because Bill was a fan of the Naked Guns. And so this was in 1993, before any of the scandals broke. I guess somebody had told me this guy's got a zipper problem. Evidently, that means, you know, he's going to screw around a lot. So, but I didn't know anything about that. So he corners me before the screening, and he says, David, you know, the girl in the movie, what's the name of the girl in the movie? And I said, Priscilla Presley? It's like, I'm such a Boy Scout. You know, it's like, and so he said, no, the other girl. I said, oh, you mean Anna Nicole Smith? And he said, yes, yeah, that's the one. And then, and I'm going, I just don't have anything to say. I have nothing to add. So he says, she's the Guess Jeans girl, right? And I go, right, yes. Again, what am I going to say? She, like, I said probably seven words to her the whole time that we were on the set. I didn't know her really. But, and so he said, you know, one time on Air Force One, you know, I went into my stateroom and I closed the door and they had put her fold out on the inside of the door. And so I go, I've got that smile, that Woody Allen smile during Annie Hall. Like, yeah. He's got like, the glued on smile. Yeah. And I said, great. And I still don't say it. I didn't. It was years later when I realized that he wanted me to set him up. And so I'm such a dope. I could have double dated with the president. He would have gotten me some girl. You know, I just totally passed it up. And I didn't know. I was pretty much straight out of Milwaukee, I think. I had no idea that the president would be interested in some woman other than his wife.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's better remembered for that stuff.
For that, yeah.
Than anything he did in office.
Let me ask you a question from one of our listeners, David. This is a thing we do on Patreon.
Yeah.
This is from Frank Salerno. I wanted to know, is David still interested in his Davy Crockett project? And has he ever discussed the Alamo with Phil Collins? I guess Phil Collins is an Alamo enthusiast.
No. You know, like, for a long time, I was like obsessed with Davy Crockett. And, you know, it's something I became a collector. I have four Davy Crockett letters. I've gotten to know some amazing people. You know, this professor of history at University of New Mexico named Paul Hutton, who's one of my best friends now. And so we wrote a movie when we were at Sony, but it just never, it's just hard to do that, to make a biopic out of a guy's life who doesn't really fit into three acts. So the movie never got made, so I just kind of gave up on it.
Right. You would do it straight as a drama.
Well, I was going to do it straight as a drama, but there would be funny parts to it because Davy Crockett himself was a very funny humorous. He was like the Will Rogers of his day or Mark Twain, and he would entertain audiences by making them laugh. And he wrote an autobiography that was funny and, you know, one of the first biographies to really use that vernacular frontier dialect. So, and he had an amazing life. I think it still would make a good picture, but probably not a movie. I don't think you could fit it into even 3 hours to tell the story. So it could be a miniseries. But, you know, right now, I think I have to work on other things and then come back to that maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There was another actress. Oh, she was in that same Naked Gun with Anna Nicole. And that was who I always liked her, Kathleen Freeman.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. She was in Three. She was played Ma Barker.
She worked with Jerry Lewis a lot. Yeah,
she was great. I mean, I don't remember too much, but yeah, she was perfect.
I remember there's a scene, Anna Nicole Smith is in some sexy bathing suit, and she's very buxom and everything. And Kathleen Freeman says, why are you wearing my bathing suit?
Oh, that's right, yeah. A lot of those lines are Pat Proft. And then Phil Collins, I'd love to meet Phil Collins, but I don't.
He's apparently also obsessed with the Alamo.
He also is a letter. He collects letters. Yeah. He's got four also.
Yeah.
But I've got the last letter that he ever wrote. So it says, tomorrow I leave for Texas. So, so take that, Phil.
Let me ask you a question about somebody we had on this show, and that's Bob Costas.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a great sport. How did you get him to say that stuff in basketball? He does it so effortlessly.
Yeah.
Like he was talking about his nipples.
Yeah, he was great and then was instantly completely mortified at the movie and embarrassed.
he had the same reaction to doing this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what did he say about baseball? He was very tough on me after basketball. He was like, did nothing but, you know, rag on the movie. But then I think a funny thing happened. First of all, the movie, you know, kind of rose in popularity as a cult favorite. And I think his kids grew up and thought it was great. And so then their dad was a hero for being in it. And so he totally saw it in a different light. But I think when he saw it, we had a joke. We had a gag when we said, and Al Michaels is saying, or Costas saying, and everybody is on their feet, and we're panning the crowd, and then we get to the wheelchair section, and then he says, well, almost everyone. Well, we cut it out of the movie because Costas said, you know, my mother, I made the mistake of inviting him to one of the previews, and he said, can you cut that out because my mother is sick and in a wheelchair? So, you know, so I cut it out. So, but then he hated the movie. And then Al.
seems like he's having a good time.
He does.
Screen.
And he's great.
Yeah. Feel these nipples.
You watch that. He's great. And I remember he said he did the wrong inflection. He said, you're excited. Feel these nipples. And I said, no, you have to say, feel these nipples.
Right.
That there's a difference.
Right.
And he,
right.
He right. debated me. Me, who invented comedy. And so I said, Bob, trust me. This is going to be funny. And he said, and then when he saw it in the preview, he said, when he saw it, he was so embarrassed to have done that. I said, Bob, if it doesn't get a laugh, it won't be in nothing. I will promise you, you will not bomb in this movie. If it gets a laugh, it's going to be in. If it doesn't get a laugh, it's out. And so he interpreted that to mean, I promised him, don't worry, we'll cut it out of the movie. So, and that got into Al Michaels' book, who said, you know, the director said, yeah, we'll cut it out. And then, of course, lied like all directors and Harvey Weinstein. So, yeah. But anyway, So then he years later, he asked me to be on his show because he was having Kareem on the show, and I said, sure, I'll be on it. I mean, he didn't call me personally; his people called, and I said, sure, I'll do it. And then I had a conflict, so I couldn't. I had to back out of it, but it was for no reason except that I really did have a conflict, and so Jim Abrams did it, and so Jim went on, and he said that Bob said. Is David mad at me? You know, he was like worried that I was mad at him because he thought I backed out because, you know. But anyway, someday we'll have dinner with Al Michaels and Bob Costas. We'll have a little reunion. I've already had a few dinners with I've become friends with Al Michaels since the whole thing.
Gilbert did a play-by-play, a dirty joke. And yes. Bob did reinterpreted it in play-by-play style.
Yes.
We have video of this.
Oh, that's
and Bob
right.
became so mortified that he got on all fours and crawled away. We
really?
Were in the Friars Club.
Yeah, I started.
Oh, he was at the. This was at the Friars Club.
We recorded the show at the Friars Club.
Oh, yeah.
And we have video.
Was it a
footage.
Roast of Costas?
No,
it was just this show.
Oh, is this show?
Podcast.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
I started telling him some really long, dirty, disgusting joke,
yeah,
and he just started slowly.
He started to sink
yeah, under
I
the table.
He's
and
Catholic
crawling.
Or something. Yeah,
I think he's also concerned about his.
He's very concerned about the image, and so basketball. First of all, in baseball, he neglected to read the script. The script, it was always rated R. He thought he'd breeze in there and it was going to be another, like, Naked Guns. But this was going to be R. It was with Matt and Trey. And so they wanted to make it edgy. So anyways, and so he thought I had, you know, I don't know what he thought.
another friend of ours who's been on the show is Craig Bierko.
Oh, yeah, I love Bierko.
Who you've done
Bierko.
Some great stuff with in the Scary Movie.
Funny,
franchise.
Funny guy. I'd love to cast him in something.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of talent, and
he's actually funny, but can also play the straight man.
So did you see Cinderella Man, where he was the heavy with Russell Crowe that Ron Howard made?
That was before the scary movie,
yeah,
I think so.
Yes, check it out. He's very good. He's very menacing.
Yeah.
As Max.
He's great. He can do anything. And he's funny. You know, if you watch Bierko on a talk show, he's funny.
He is.
He can go on. Whereas, you know, Leslie was funny on a talk show, but only because he brought his fart machine.
Right.
He brought
he loved that thing. Obsessed with that fart.
Yeah, that's what he did. That was his shtick.
I didn't know it went back to Airplane, that he was on the airplane set
before
with that
Airplane.
Machine.
Yeah, he went back to Police Squad at least. But he would do this thing. And then, you know, I would be on press tours with Leslie. We'd be in like Charlotte, North Carolina, and we'd be on an elevator. And people would recognize him in a crowded elevator. And then he would be very pleasant and say hello and then fart in the elevator.
Yeah.
And people would get off on the first floor.
You wrote a nice tribute to him, too, in The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, I found out when the Hollywood Reporter called and said, can you write something for us about your recollections of Leslie? And I said, sure. Wait a minute. Why? That was when I heard that he was dead. So that's how I heard. Yeah.
I remember meeting Leslie Nielsen, and he, of course, had his fart thing with him. and I said, oh, I got one of those, and it never really worked when I did it. And he goes, is this the one you have? Is it the black rubber and the top of it's red? And I said, yeah. He goes, oh, that's useless.
He was an expert. Yeah. He was a complete expert. Yeah. He knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss him. He was a great guy. Yeah.
Can we throw a couple of other actors' names out at you for fun? What was working with Ricardo Montalban like?
Yeah, it was very nice. Yeah, he was great. Yeah, just a very nice
professional
man. Professional and totally got it. Was no trouble at all. He did object to one line. There was one line, another proft line, where it's like he's in a hospital at the Our Lady of the Never Had the Pickle. That was the line. He said, "Can you please not put that in?" And we said, "Yes." You know, look, we're.
Is the plot of Naked Gun, the first one, lifted a little bit from that Charles Bronson movie?
Yeah.
From Telephone?
Of Telephone, yeah. We just lifted it from Telephone, but we didn't have to buy the rights because it wasn't the entire plot.
I love that.
Yeah.
What about one of our favorites?
Right? And then the other part of it was from Day of the Jackal.
The Day of the Jackal.
Yeah,
that's a good movie.
Tracking us. Yeah, good movies.
Yeah. How about one of our favorites who comes up a lot on this show, Ernest Borgnine?
Oh, yeah.
She did Basketball.
Yeah, he was excellent. You know, by the time they get to be... You know, he was probably in his 80s when he did, I think it was Basketball.
Basketball, yeah.
And they can't remember lines anymore. Leslie couldn't either. We used to do a walk and talk, which was, you know, you track with the actors and they talk. And so with Leslie, it became a walk or talk. So with Ernie Borgnine, we had him just stationary, but he couldn't remember a line. I mean, they just can't. You know, you can imagine when you get into your 70s, I guess. But we had a teleprompter for him, and so he was very comfortable with that.
How about Robert Vaughn, who's also in the
Robert Vaughn? He was great. Yeah, Robert Vaughn was great. They're all wonderful, and so. You know, Robert Vaughn often, you know, he had a great instinct and he would have it on the first take. And I was always trying to get something better. So, and Matt and Trey would write down all my quotes. And so, and I guess I said to Robert Vaughn, your best take is always the one before I started directing you. So,
Does it give you an extra sense of satisfaction to see these guys who you've been watching your whole life in straight roles and they've never really gotten a chance to be funny? I can't think of Robert Vaughn in a comedy. I think of him in Bullet.
But anybody who's straight like that will be wonderful in a comedy.
Right. Is it particularly satisfying when
to direct that, make that happen? Well, you know, it's kind of what I've called the Uberization of comedy, which, you know, Uber and Lyft is like you don't need any skill anymore as a taxi driver. That occupation used to connote skill, like the taxi driver. Driver had to know where to go, but now with Waze and GPS, anybody can do that. So you get in a car and anybody can be a taxi driver now. So with an airplane, anyone could be funny. So Robert Stack, Leslie Nielsen, Robert Vaughn, Peter Graves, all these guys could be just as funny as highly skilled comics like Chevy Chase or Jim Carrey or Robin Williams.
Interesting.
And did you ever have to remind them, I mean, if they ever did make this mistake, did you ever have to remind them, no, don't be funny?
Yes, yeah. You know, when we did the first table read for Naked Gun, Priscilla Presley was very nervous. And she said, you know, I don't know how to be funny. And I said, you don't have to be funny. You just let the lines do the work. And that became the direction that I gave to actors most, is just let the lines do the work. And most of the people got it and just did it straight. And Priscilla was wonderful. I never had to direct her. I just had to work with Leslie to, you know, on just a lot of nuances. But Leslie also got it to be absolutely straight. If you watch Airplane, you watch Lloyd Bridges' performance, there's a 5% he knew he was in a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so he was much better in Hot Shots.
Interesting. So he learned.
He learned from that. Yeah. And then also in pre-production, Lloyd was trying to make sense out of his dialogue. He was trying to actually change his dialogue. And we don't care. The dialogue doesn't mean anything. And finally, Stack told him, Lloyd, you know, no one's listening to us. You know, there's watermelons dropping, yeah. There's spears flying to the wall. Nobody cares. Right. Just keep talking. And so Stack totally got it. Yeah.
Watching Zero Hour, the thing you were referring to, where somebody actually assembled the two of them and put them back, put them next to each other, and you watch Sterling Hayden say, you know, looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. Obviously, no one will ever take that movie seriously again.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
But we would take, like, one line, like the guy says, it looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking, and then we did that, and then, but we kept going. We kept, you know,
sniffing
upping,
glue.
Yeah,
and,
sniffing glue.
Right.
You know, the next one was, drinking, and then I think the last one was sniffing glue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Amphetamines. Yeah. So, and it worked. It just worked. It was just, that was what we call ad absurdum.
What did you mean, David, when you said, I hope I have this right, you said Airplane was your night at the opera and Top Secret was Duck Soup? Do you remember
right.
saying
so
this?
The Marx Brothers did, but we did it in reverse order. So the Marx Brothers did their funniest movie, which was Duck Soup, but it was a flop at the box office because there was, if you go back and watch it, it was just like Top Secret. Very funny all the way through, but no character, no arc, no act structure.
It's just anarchy.
It's just anarchy. Yeah. And because of that, there's no ending. And audiences subconsciously attach a lot of importance to the ending. And the ending is literally 50% of a movie. And so what happened was that that was the Marx Brothers' last Paramount movie, and they were finished. They were kicked out of Paramount because Duck Soup flopped. Of course, now we have no idea. This is just one of the funniest classic movies ever. And then Chico was playing cards with Irving Thalberg, mm-hmm. who was the head of MGM. And he was saying, well, you know, they can't get arrested. They can't get a deal. And Thalberg said, you know, you guys can make, you know, twice the money with half the jokes. And Chico said, what? You know, they didn't know anything. And so Thalberg got them, you know, good writers like Maury Rizkind and George S. Kaufman, and they did a three-act structure, and they did Night at the Opera. And so we did just the opposite. We did Airplane because we copied the structure of a Arthur Haley movie, Zero Hour, which had a very fine story and plot and characters. And so it worked fine. And then we did Top Secret, which was just a joke book.
So you did it in reverse order.
We did it in reverse,
That's interesting. You know, we've talked about the Paramount films and the MGM films a lot on this show. And Gilbert and I are of the school that it's almost disappointing in a way that Night at the Opera was the more successful film because it's not really it's not the funnier film.
Well,
certainly not.
Yeah, it is very funny, but you know of course, Animal Crackers and
Horse Feathers,
Monkey Business, Horse Feathers are great.
Yeah,
and of course, Duck Soup, And then they do Night at the Opera, which was their most successful movie. And then Thalberg dies. And then they did Day at the Races,
right,
which really was terrible.
Yeah.
Half terrible.
It's a sharp decline.
And then after that,
it was terrible.
Rock bottom. Yeah, they're the lost.
At the Circus Go West.
Yeah, the
it was
score.
And Room Service, the big, terrible movies. They're really unwatchable and sad.
Yeah.
But Night at the Opera, I felt like Thalberg put them on a leash.
Night at the Opera?
Yeah.
But I think within that Night at the Opera, in those scenes, they were fine.
They're great.
It was great.
They're a little bit in service to the love story, which is what we object to.
But the way that it should be, that's the way it should be, because movies are an hour and a half, and you have to tell a story. You have to satisfy the audience. You can't leave the audience hanging. It's just that's the nature of that art form, and it's different than TV. In TV, you don't need that. You can do half-hour bites or whatever. You don't need to do that, but in a movie, that's why the bar is higher for a movie. You have to tell a story. You have to check all these boxes, and it's really harder than TV.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm about out of cards, Gil. You got something else for this man?
No,
I do want to ask about.
I had nothing to ask him when he came in.
Yeah, it's as I have. I have no shortage of stories and verbiage, but as you can see.
Yeah, I think Gilbert did want to ask you about, you did a series called HUD or HUD?
HUD,
yeah. Wanted to ask you about working with Theodore Bakel.
Right, well, that's after I did Basketball, of course, you know, after a flop, you're in director jail. So my partner, Gil Netter, got us a deal at NBC to do television. And that was in 2000. And so we did a pilot called HUD, which was a secret agent movie, and HUD stood for the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
It's a hip joke.
So it's like, and the premise was that the CIA, NSA, FBI were in this media age had become too public and they couldn't keep anything secret. So they needed some kind of obscure and useless agency like HUD to be the real secret agency. So we did that, and we need to cast the lead. And so we couldn't find a lead, but finally they showed me this one guy who was great. And so we cast him, and because he had been on the correspondent on The Daily Show, and the pilot was great, but NBC didn't pick up the series.
Worked with Steve Corin on that.
It was Steve Corin was my co-writer.
Right, right, right. Who's a friend of Darris.
Oh, yeah. Steve Corin's great. Yeah. And very funny. And so the NBC didn't pick up the pilot because who was this? The lead was Steve Carell. And who the hell was Steve Carell? So it never got made.
Well, how was Theodore Bakel?
Theodore Bakel was great. I had actually met him. I had met him years before at, of all places, the Playboy Mansion. And Theodore Bakel.
Was he in the grotto?
Not in the grotto, but it was alongside Wilt Chamberlain and, you know, all these. Wilt Chamberlain going around trying to get girls' phone numbers. You know, they wouldn't give him his phone number. He said, just give me 3 digits. Insanity. So we're waiting for, I met Theodore Bakel. And so I thought of him when we did this. And my parents were big fans of Theodore Bakel.
Fiddler,
yeah. So I cast him in this, and he was great, very nice fellow. And then, during it, my mom and dad came out to visit, and I invited Theodore Bakel and his son to dinner at our house. And so we had dinner with Theodore
Bakel.
What
did we learn about Theodore Bakel on this show? There was something interesting that came up, that he had this other life.
In secret, he's a neo-Nazi, evidently.
You've probably been asked this 1,000 times, David, but I'm going to ask it. Was there some gag or some bit in Airplane that you had to lose that you loved, or did everything
that was funny, of course.
You took it out to colleges, right? You tested it?
Yeah, we tested it at colleges, and, you know, there were things that were cut out. I mean, that's why, you know, deleted scenes in comedies are never any good. It's stupid.
It's true.
Why they're deleted because they weren't funny.
It's
so
true.
Why would you go, oh boy, I'm going to see these?
I went through Carell's series, The Office, and they have lots of deleted scenes. You watch them, and invariably you say, I see why they cut it.
But even the outtakes of comedies are stupid because what do they do? They forget a line and people laugh. What's funny about that?
I always hated that.
Why do they do that
comedies?
At the end of comedies? Stupid. Yeah.
And they did that in Being There, which is supposed to be dramatic ending.
Oh yeah.
And it's all cracking up on the
outtakes.
Set.
Yeah. So yeah, they crack up. They forget a line and they think it's funny. I don't know. I don't get it.
My favorite gag in Airplane, I have to tell you, is Birds too.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Yeah, yes, Birds too.
Which is just one of those things where you don't want to dissect the frog and you don't want to explain why it's funny.
I don't think. I don't know
just,
if it gets a laugh. I don't know, but it's like one of these
great.
Things. Yes, Birds too. And the other
fucking great.
The other one of my favorite gags is it says stewardess, can you face some unpleasant facts? And she says no. And then he keeps going. He just ignores it. He goes on. He says, no.
Also, very subtle sight gags. Like there's the bulletins from around the world.
Yeah.
And there's the guy with the drums.
The guy drums.
Oh, and they do the cut.
The camera.
To the other camera.
And the other camera.
And plays a different drum.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is just no stone unturned. Yeah. It's a perfect film.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a perfect
People
film.
People do say that every time they see it, they see. You know, gags that they missed. So,
well, it's like Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles, and even a film like The Godfather, which is, we talk about films that come on the television, you absolutely have to watch them.
You get stuck.
You're compelled.
Yeah, for me, it's Midway. Have you ever watched Midway?
Henry Fonda?
Yeah, Henry Fonda and Glenn Ford, Charlton Heston. I just get stuck watching it.
But I'm happy to say I know a lot of people that consider Airplane to be one of those movies.
Oh,
you just
I'm
cannot.
Very proud of that. Yes, if you get stuck. Yes.
Yeah, I work with Whoopi at The View, and she is constantly quoting Airplane.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I know she's a friend. I know she's
with
Jerry.
Yeah, she's a friend of Jerry.
But
yeah.
she loves that film.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
More than life itself, and just constantly quoting it.
And there's another actress who was quoting it and was on
Maya Rudolph.
Maya Rudolph,
yeah,
yes.
She just went on Kimmel and did a...
She did a whole thing. She did the whole black jive.
She did the whole jive thing.
She knew the whole thing.
On the Jimmy Kimmel show. Yeah. Well?
Well?
I think that killed the conversation.
It's about 20 years.
Yeah. One mention of Kimmel and we're done. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
Okay.
That was about
20
cards worth of questions.
Yes.
Thank you. This was fun.
We covered a lot.
Okay.
Let's talk about quick plugs. What do you got in the pipeline? Anything you
want
to talk about?
I wrote a movie. You know, we wrote a great film noir parody called The Star of Malta. And so that's you know, we've had that for a while. Of course, you know, it's hard to raise money for anything. But now we're writing a script to Naked Gun 444 and a quarter. Nordberg did it. So that's what we're all about.
Oh, wow.
And we're almost done with that. We're going to bring it into Paramount. Paramount has no idea this is coming. But I'm just...
Torn from the headlines.
Yeah, torn
so
from
to
the
speak.
Headlines. Yeah, and there's a part for Nordberg in it. Yes. He's driving an Uber in the Bronco. Yeah.
We could ask you a million other things, David, but in the interest of time, this has been fascinating.
All right, I'm glad.
And an education.
Okay.
So... I'm Gilbert Gottfried. This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host, Frank Santopadre. And we have been interviewing a guy who's brought us some of the funniest movies ever made, David Zucker. Thank you, David.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Are you going to promo the next one right now?
You know,
Bob Costas coming up.
You didn't give him shit. You've been known to do, very famous filmmakers who have not used you.
Yeah,
like that. We had Barry Levinson on the show.
Oh, really?
And Gilbert abused him for not casting him. So you let David off the hook.
And actually, Barry Levinson has done things where he uses comics.
Yes.
In his movies.
Yes, Gilbert.
I only use, straight guys, but, yeah.
So Barry Levinson goes out of his way not to.
Oh, right, yeah. So I, I haven't really gone out of my way. I just think the garden variety, I'm not using you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was like offhand. It's like, yeah, you don't need to be insulted by that. Yeah.
This was a kick, David. Thanks.
Sure.
So much fun.
Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast is produced by Dara Gottfried and Frank Santapadre, with audio production by Frank Verderosa. Our researchers are Paul Rayburn and Andrea Simmons. Web and social media is handled by Mike McPadden, Greg Pear, and John Bradley Seals. Special audio contributions by John Beach. Special thanks to John Murray, John Fotiatis, and Nutmeg Creative. Especially Sam Giovanco and Daniel Farrell for their assistance.